I'm hoping that from wherever you're sitting, you can see the screen, because there's some things that I'll be showing, and you might want to see it. So feel free to move a little bit if you needed to get a good glimpse of what's actually going to go on, especially those of you further off on the wings of our place here. But let me begin by saying this. I was taught as a child not to judge a book by its cover. Right? I think you heard that too. But what it is that you don't look simply on the outside of something, but you have to see inside. And of course we're referring not to actually a book, but we're also referring to people primarily when we use those words. In the same way, however, and you'll see how these things will connect, we cannot judge a faith by its cover either. Today's reading for us is about the building of Solomon's temple. In particular, all the details. So if you're a designer or if you are an architect, this might be of deep interest to you. For the rest of us, a lot of times it's like, what's a cubit? How long is that? But besides those things, the reason why this is the passage that we're examining today is that for the people in that day and age, it meant a lot. In particular, it meant to the Israelites exactly what God says in this passage, that I will be among you. I live with you. Of course, he lives in a solid gold room, but that was the sense of it. That's what the temple meant. When they were wandering in the desert before these times, God was in a tent, in what they called the tabernacle. But once they finally settled into this nation and reached the golden age of Israel during the monarchy, way on back, in the times of David and his son Solomon, when they were at the height of their wealth and power as a nation, David, the father of Solomon who built all of this, said, I don't want God to live in a tent when we live in these grand places. So they built this temple for God. And for them it was a symbol of God's presence with them. And I'm going to give you an idea as to what it actually looked like. Everything that Pastor Ed just read for us, it actually looks something like this on the outside. This is the actual temple no longer exists. It was a wonder of the ancient world, but it was razed to the ground by the Romans. It was stripped over time of all its gold, everything. Everything was taken out of it of value and given away to other kings that threatened Israel after its golden era. But this is probably what it would have looked like in its day. And even Herod's temple, which was built during Jesus' time, was around during Jesus' time, is comparable, but certainly not as lavish in regards to its gold and everything else. The interior, which Pastor Ed sort of read for us as well, would have looked something like this, again an artist's rendition, of a room that is completely made of solid gold, that's overlaid every single thing. Gold being that of value, gold representing that of purity, gold representing the honor of God. It was the place of kings, the throne room of God, and in this case, the temple of God. And again, you have to realize that God's intention was to be among His people. But over time, the temple also became a place where people began to be afraid of God, where they felt that He separated Himself out from the temple, because there was no other place that was understood within Israelite worship that people needed to be except at the temple. They could only worship God at the temple. That's His house. So if you're going to go visit God, you got to go to His house. That's the way it kind of worked. So that was the simplified version of an understanding. So worship was centered in Jerusalem, centered upon the building of this temple, this thing. Later on, during even this time, when Solomon, in his mind, was dedicating this temple, he says this, But will God really dwell on earth? The heavens, even the highest heaven, cannot contain you. How much less this temple that I have built? Was Solomon a man of deep faith? For those of you who read the scriptures, you may know that his father, David, King David, had this deep devotion towards God, wrote a lot of these psalms in the Bible that pour out his heart to God. But Solomon, we know from his history, turns away from God. Yes, he built this wonderful, beautiful, lavish temple. Do you judge a book by its cover? A person's faith by what they build? By what they seem to show the rest of the world? For we know Solomon did turn away from God. And he worshipped many different idols of his region. He made allegiances and alliances and marriages that led to other places away from God. So his spiritual life was quite different inside from what it was on the outside. Here are some other temples that have been built over time, or churches. This one's quite an interesting one. I don't know, has anyone ever seen this in real life or visited? This is in Turkey. You've seen it? Yeah. Fantastic. Wow, you've been around. Istanbul, yes. And you know what it is, right? It's the Hagia Sophia, which means it used to be called the Church of Holy Wisdom. It was built by the Eastern Orthodox Church in its day. And I mean, it's pretty stunning on the outside. You know, expect this to be on Nauvoo, for those of you who know Star Wars. Anyways, but it was later converted because it was conquered, obviously, during the era of the Crusades and medieval times and the rise of Islam, to a mosque. So the interior still has its church architecture, but as you can see, the Arabic that is there for its Muslim worship. So that building, beautiful, stunning, in Istanbul, is now a mosque, but this is what it is like on the inside. A wonderful. Now, some of you may have seen this. If you've been to Rome, or to the Vatican in particular, this is St. Peter's. I've never been. Okay, so I'm just looking at pictures. I'm just an online tourist. And it's that little window where the Pope will poke his head out and do his announcements, St. Peter's Square and stuff like this. But this is St. Peter's Basilica. And it was quite the marvel. The interior of St. Peter's, I mean, I only give you one picture of the interior, but there's just amazing things. Like there's the cupola, I think that's what it's called, right? Which is the big dome. And you look up into it and it's, you know, amazing too. And Pastor Ed's been there and he tells me about it. And it's something else. Does anyone know what this church is? Just shout it out if you know it. St. Paul's, exactly. St. Paul's, Sir Christopher Wren. And this is in London, England. It's quite a feat of engineering as well. It has several false domes and roofs, for those of you who know. This is the interior looking out towards, I think, the doors, the exit. Of course, you're not allowed to go in until you pay the fee and the tourist thing. But this is St. Paul's. This is a little closer to home. I know Pastor Diana knows what it is. Does anyone know what this is? Looks kind of more plain. It's Notre Dame. Well, I'm thinking about football. Notre Dame, à Montréal. It's the one in Montreal. Notre Dame, of course, the namesake being the one in Paris. It's similar in some ways, but what this church is known for, and I visited it as a child, is the interior. So the outside, looks like a big church. Yeah, like many across Europe. But inside, it's crazy beautiful. I mean, or, you know, depending on what your taste is, right? But it's something else. You go in there, it's like, whoa. where did I just go? It's hard to tell from the outside, but on the inside. But even on the outside, inside, so to speak, this is the surface of what the church presents. I don't know if you've been here. We have to put in the Americans, of course. They have the Crystal Cathedral, where Robert Schuller is the pastor. And the interior this is the exterior, but the interior looks like this. And that's just looking one direction. If there are other pictures you could find, their pipe organ, this is less than half of it. It's massive. It's mind-blowing. I haven't had the opportunity to be there, but you can see it on TV too. They telecast it and so on. But these are the temples of our day, of our age. This is what people see. Now, here's some other interesting places I've also dug up for us to see. They're not in our nation. This is in Reykjavik, Iceland. This is the church that they've built there, right in there. This is the premier church. And it's quite an astounding architectural thing as well. Here's another one that's interesting. This is in Colombia, South America. And of course, they modeled it after a European church. And they placed it over a river, which is astounding. I mean, it's just pretty stunning to see. Now, is this morning just an architectural sort of visit around the world? Is this what we're talking about? Yes and no. You cannot judge a book by its cover. These are the covers. Because the question is, what do these churches actually represent? They represented something we have to understand in their history, just like the Temple of Solomon represented, or is supposed to represent, the very presence of God, His love, and desire to be amongst His people. But over time, and over age, over the different aspects of grandeur, and yes, there is a moment when you walk into some of these churches, these physical buildings, where you're just awestruck. Like, how did they build this? It's incredible. And you may have this sense of expanse, of the power, the glory of God. But for those of us in what we call the post-Christian era, we know something else. We've read the book. We didn't just look at the covers. We've been in some of these churches. And what I mean by in these churches is not the physical building. We've been among the people who call themselves Christian, who attend, well, maybe not in buildings as lavish as these I've shown, but who've been there. People like Solomon, who on the day of the dedication of that temple that we had read about, stood there for hours, making sacrifice upon sacrifice in front of all of Israel, making the show of his devotion. And we can have in our churches, grand as these, a deep sickness and brokenness. In fact, what the church would call of itself, sin, selfishness, power struggles. It's almost like a spy movie sometimes. Intrigue in the church. But we're not always talking about Dan Brown and stuff like this, you know, the Catholic Church and all that spooky sort of, you know, interwoven networks of secret societies inside the church. If you've been in a church, plain and simple, if you know anyone who's a Christian, where is the holiness? Where is the difference? Because it doesn't have to be a complicated sort of intrigue and politics. Sometimes we just don't get along. I don't understand what you've said. I misread. You misread. We misread. Or people hold tightly to their own dogma. Those are the perspectives. And although on one side we talk about the love of God and His grandeur, the love of Christ, His sacrifice, we ourselves in the church can live lives that are completely devoid of grace. This is the dichotomy. This is why we are taught, even as children, not to judge a book by its cover. It's not to condemn others. That's the way it's supposed to look. Both inside and outside the church. The church, religion, Christianity today is judged by its cover. But this is because the tables have now been turned. The church used to judge others, or has in the past, or certain sectors of the church, certain people have judged those who are outside the church by their covers as well. Fair game. But will we ever reach a time in which we both, whichever sides we're on, if there even is such a thing as a side, will stop judging one another by our covers? But one of the things we need to begin to do is begin to shed our covers. Our covers protect us, don't they? From everyone else. We are afraid. We are afraid that people will find out who we really are and they won't like us. That we'll be rejected. That we're told that we're not good enough, that we'll be condemned, that we'll be judged. And that is why books have covers. Not just to sell them, but protect them. That's why we have covers. Some people call them masks. So what has Jesus come to do? What has this got to do with us? And here's some things I'd like to have us visit. As Jesus was leaving the temple, one of His disciples said to Him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings. Do you see all these great buildings?" replied Jesus, "Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." The first temple of Solomon was razed to the ground by the Assyrians. The temple of Herod, which was a magnificent and massive temple in its own right during Jesus' time, which may not have been as gilt with gold, but huge nonetheless, was the temple that Jesus was walking through. The courtyard itself was massive. And these were the words that exchanged between Himself and His disciple. And that temple was razed to the ground by the Romans in about 70 AD. But what does Jesus mean? It was reported during that time, and even recorded in the Gospels, that Jesus, they thought that Jesus was this, you know, what's He saying? This is ridiculous. How could you raise such a massive monument to the ground? How could you say that there will be no stone left on another? How could you say these things? Because He goes on to say, and of course is a reference to Himself, "You raise this temple to the ground, but in 3 days it will be raised again." He's talking about Himself. Which already begins to lead us somewhere else. Jesus, I don't know, He doesn't seem impressed by Herod's temple. I am. I've seen it in models. It's a fancy thing like any of these other churches I've shown you. But what do you do when your church looks like this? This is a church in Harlem. If you've ever been to the United States, in some of the certain areas that are a little more run down, there are churches on every corner practically. I don't know what they're like on the inside. These are their covers. They look like storefronts. It's one way to Jesus type of signs, you know, flashing lights sometimes. Sometimes painting, sometimes nothing except simple words. Or someone will have graffiti on them. What does this mean for us? How about us? You've seen the interior of some of these churches. Look around you. You know what they do here the rest of the week? You know, it's like, this is the fitness classroom, right? This is the dance room. You know, if you look that way, all you see is ourselves. There's no grandeur here, is there? Or is there? This is the community center. This is where people live their lives, have their classes. This is where life is lived. This is not a space that's set apart to be holy, and no one else can touch. This is where everyone else is at. And the scriptures also teach us this, for we are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will live with them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people. When the Apostle Paul wrote these words from the New Testament, he was actually, in those last few lines here, he's actually referencing the words of God from Leviticus, Deuteronomy, from the Old Testament, even before the building of the temple, before even the tabernacle. God has always been saying, I will live with them and I will walk among them. I will be with them. But what breaks my heart is in history, we have separated God out from everyone else. We've created a cover for Him that He doesn't want. And even Solomon recognized this when he built his phenomenal temple. You whom the heavens cannot contain, how could you live in the temple that I have built? And Paul here in 2 Corinthians says, we are the temple. We are the temple. And this is why, you know, sometimes those of you who've been around know that I keep on repeating to you, no one here goes to church. No one. We are the church. We are the church. Kind of like Yoda, you know. There's no try. You have to be, right? Whatever. I can't do the voice, you know, the Muppets. Anyways, but that's the thing. You either be the church, or you're just, I don't know what you're doing, actually. You can't go there. Now, you know, of course, we have to temper all that. Yes, there are church buildings, and we have to refer to them that way. So don't go around correcting your friends going, yeah, that's not a church. You know, that's just weird. You know, that's just crazy now, right? Because then you're judging someone again. We don't need that. But what it is, you want to speak it, you want to live this for yourself. And what I'm telling you is this. We are called to be the church. What does that mean? We are the people of God. Well, here's what the real church is. This is just some generic church somewhere in North America. They got the little Bible thing, so I'm sure they're Protestant. Here's a church in China. This is what that looks like. This is what the church looks like. It's the people. You don't look at the outside. You look at the inside. But you look even further than that, I'm telling you. This is a church in Uganda. This is a church in South America. I'm not exactly sure where. But it's in the jungle. Kids in balloons, always good. This is a church in someone's living room. But like I said, you look beyond just the gathered people. If I look at you, and if you just turn around and look at each other now, or even just look across at each other. You don't have to look that far. This is the church. But there's more. Because if we're not looking at the building now anymore, and we're starting to look at the people, what are we really looking at? Because you can't just look at a person. Don't judge a book by its cover. Do you know the people you look at? Do you know them? Do you love them? Do you care about them? Do you know what makes them happy? Do you know what makes them sad? Do you know the thoughts that go on in their head? Did you know that we are bigger inside than we are outside? Do you know we can dream of another world? How big those dreams can be? How massive the desires and passions of our hearts actually are? Because in our world, sometimes we just don't have the energy. Maybe we're tired. Maybe we've been hurt. And we look at people. We just don't want to know. Maybe we are at a place where we can't know. Maybe we're at a place where we don't want to know. But where God always is He's at the place where He wants to know. And He wants us to know each other. The true church, beyond the cover, the true persons, the true people of God, the people both inside and outside the church. We might not know a million people. I mean, it's impossible. I mean, unless you're Facebook crazy and, you know, I don't know, added everyone that, you know, that you could possibly add. But to really know them, and to also know their faults. When you get to know people, you know they've got some cuckoo things going on. And I'm referring to myself. You ask my wife. And yet, can we still care about each other? Even though there's certain things that we don't agree with, don't understand. Do we have the patience? Because if you really want to be the church, if you want to be in relationship with God, He cares very little about the cover. He's always just wanted to know who we are. And conversely, He wants us to know who He is. Not who the church, quote unquote, has said He is. In my own life, as a Christian, as one who wants to follow Jesus, I am still on that journey. I still want to know more. My prayer is, show me who You are. Do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. The context of both of these passages from Paul is that these people were doing things in their lives that were made them not aware that they were called where God will not just be among us, but in us. Now, who are the implications for us all? Here's the thing. Reducing it down, everything I've said, the church is a people. Is a people, is a people, it's a people. You are the church. The church reveals God. Whether the ones with steeples and buildings or not, they represent, they're symbolic of God. They can be a symbol of power, of authority, of oppression, or they can be a symbol of grace, love, and compassion. So whether you're talking about the physical buildings or even yourself, because the church ultimately is a people, what do you reveal of Him if you know Him? People see how the church acts, lives, and relates. Not just the physical building, but those who are in it. It's those relationships that count. How do we care for one another? But not only for one another, but for the world. Do we have a concern? Do we make friends? You know, not just with this big stick of telling people what to do, but just loving them, no matter what they're doing or whatever they're thinking. But just being with them. Some will be harder than others. You know, you can't be friends with necessarily everyone. But the ones who are your friends now, how deep do you go? And finally, people come to understand God through the church. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm being frank. In my experience, I don't know. It's been both. You want to hate the church. Well, not the church, the certain people. Because the people at the church who've just rubbed you the wrong way. Who have just said really crass, nasty, nasty things. But then I've come around sometimes to recognize and realize I need to be compassionate towards them. When I think about Jesus and people who misunderstood Him and abused Him, He simply says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. That's a tough one. So my hope is this. That you will think about breaking down the walls you may have. Not the physical walls. Not even the walls that are outside of you. In terms of reaching other people. The walls we build are inside us. Inside us. Let's pray together. Father in heaven, these were beautiful buildings. And sometimes we wish, or maybe not, that we could visit or be in one, to know the grandeur. Sometimes all we need to do is close our eyes, know what it's like to be loved, to be accepted, to be cared for. Sometimes we can't even find that within a church community. But for this church community, that's the only one I know, at least the one I can be a part of. Help us to do the hard work of knowing one another. Help us to do what you ask us to do, but more than that, just to, because you love us so much, help us to learn to love others. Because you're so gracious to us, help us to be gracious to others, no matter what. And perhaps if we can do that, Lord, if we can just follow your lead, realize that you don't need monuments, that you just want to know us. Maybe that'll be enough. Hear our prayer. Show us who you are. Amen.